Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast. Today we're exploring the relationship between artificial intelligence, AI, and education. The World Bank EdTech team is partnering with Digital Promise and AI Engage to host a series of episodes about AI and education. This week, we're exploring how AI is enabling new forms of student learning. World Bank Senior Education and Technology Specialist Cristobal Cobo and Digital Promise Executive Director Jeremy Rochelle speak with Professor James Lester, Distinguished University Professor of Computer Science and Director of the Center for Educational Informatics at North Carolina State University, and Anna Paiva, Full Professor in the Department of Computer Science and Engineering at Instituto Superior Técnico from the University of Lisbon. Our guests share current applications of these technologies in education and where there's room for adaptation. With some of the major challenges and issues related to AI and education in mind, we discuss how education systems can be prepared to effectively integrate AI to support education and what countries should be doing to be ready.
Welcome to the World Bank EdTech Podcast, a conversation on the use of technology and innovation in education globally. My name is Cristobal Cobo. I'm the Senior Education Technology Specialist at the World Bank. I'm delighted to announce a new series of podcasts on artificial intelligence and education. This is a collaboration between the World Bank and Digital Promise. We have here with us today Jeremy Rochelle, Executive Director of Digital Promise. Many thanks for facilitating this collaboration. Please share with us why this collaboration together, why this series in this topic in particular.
Thanks, Cristobal. Digital Promise, we're really all about working intersections between educators, between researchers, and also with innovators in the world. And as we think about the future, one of the most promising opportunities, but also the most challenging opportunities, is around artificial intelligence and education. And we've come to strongly believe at Digital Promise, the only way we can make progress is to encourage more conversations. Conversations about opportunities and conversations about the risks. So that's what I'm hoping to do here today with the excellent guests we have on board.
Oh yes, we have such a luxury part of participants to our AI and education first podcast of this series. We are very pleased to have with us today Anna Paiva, Full Professor in the Department of Computer Science and Engineering at the Instituto Superior Técnico from the University of Lisbon in Portugal, and James Lester, Distinguished University Professor of Computer Science in the North Carolina State University in the US. Both of you, you're very welcome to this podcast today. Why don't you introduce a little yourself and tell us a little bit about you and the work you do and perhaps why you're interested in AI and education.
Hi, hello. Thank you for inviting me for this fantastic new series. I investigate how to create intelligent interactive systems with agents, that is AI, that have this capability to interact with humans in a natural and social way. And I've been doing this by creating capabilities, giving them emotions, personality, culture, behavior that allows these agents to interact with humans and foster certain types of creative behavior and learning. And of course, this is very much important for education. So I combine these methods of AI in applications, namely in education, to foster learning, to foster empathy, to foster some kind of better interaction with the machines. So yeah, that's what I do.
Wow, a lot to unpack over there. That's super exciting and very, very tempting to deep dive. James, would you like to share us a little bit of your profile and your rate of interest?
Sure, it's great to be here. I'm a faculty member in computer science and my technical training is in AI. But my real interest, my passion for now over a quarter century has been developing AI applications that can help people learn. So really re-envisioning what it means to do education by bringing AI technologies to bear. This is a particularly exciting time in this field because AI technologies have become so powerful in the last few years that we really have the opportunity to think about what's the best way to leverage them to not only improve how people learn, say, more effectively, but also how to more deeply engage them?
That's great. Jeremy, what do you think? I mean, we have these huge, huge, promising areas of exploration. Where should we start in this conversation?
One place I'd like to start is just with some of the vision that each of you may be bringing to this. I think when people think about AI in education, they might think a bit narrowly. For example, a student working individually all alone and an agent work with them. But I think both of you have a view that's more social and it's more oriented toward narrative and story. And so I would just like to get some of the possibilities you see out on the table.
We've just recently begun what I think was going to be a very interesting line of work at the National Science Foundation AI Institute for Engaged Learning on narrative-centered learning that's driven by AI. So while the kind of historical view of AI for education has been, as Jeremy said, a single student sitting with his or her machine interacting with it, we envision a much brighter, much more interactive kind of experience that's really story-driven. And as Jeremy said, we're also very interested in the social side of these interactions. So sort of thinking about what does it mean to deeply engage students around collaborative learning and do so in a story setting. So AI is beginning to bring capabilities that can kind of fundamentally generate narrative experiences through all kinds of interesting innovations under the hood. And we're especially interested in considering what does it mean to be able to take these technologies and create experiences around story that are deeply, deeply engaging and do so in a collaborative context.
I really think that stories changes the way we learn. And in fact, we are also exploring with stories, but to learn about empathy, to learn about others. In particular, we have a project funded by the Portuguese Science Foundation, where we help teenagers to deal with cyberbullying by giving them the possibility to understand the stories and the impact of certain bullying and cyberbullying activities will have in their peers. And by creating these stories and using AI to drive the emergence of these stories, teenagers can learn how to address the problem of cyberbullying. So this collaboration and this emergence of collaborative behavior to deal with problems like cyberbullying is something that AI can help. And in fact, the stories are inspired by real stories that happen to kids and to teenagers. It really helps them to understand the impact that their actions have on the others and learn how to pass this bystander problem when dealing with cyberbullying. And that's what we've been trying to do. And of course, collaboration is extremely important and helping each other. And that's what I think AI can play a big role. Of course, this is new. It's something that, hasn't been done before, and I think we are very proud of it.
That's exciting, and I mean, Jeremy, you have been studying this topic of education technology for decades. You are a well-savvy expert on this, but many of the previous decades were focused on transferring resources from point A to point B in a much more linear way. What I'm hearing now is opportunities not only to provide access to information, but also to develop a number of social-emotional skills at a large scale. And I was wondering when in the design of these systems, and this is a question for everyone who would like to jump in, is something that you can decide regardless of the context, or these interactions seem to be adjusted to some cultures or some contextual conditions?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a great question, Cristobal. And so we know that collaborative learning is a really strong form of learning, but it's not always the easiest form of learning. And even in collaborative learning, we can have problems with a student, like Anna says, being more like a bully and shutting down the work of the other students in the group. But in different cultures, how students respond in collaborative learning and show their engagement, show their learning, invite others to join in, those are all culturally bound, and different cultures may do them differently. And so one of the exciting things here is to learn about what different students need for successful collaborative learning and how we can adapt things to support those different needs.
Perhaps I can chime in here as well. One of the interesting dimensions of context is formal versus informal. So we have a very strong sense that the kinds of learning that goes along in classrooms is different than the kinds of learning that goes along in, say, museums. And so it's really interesting to think about what are the affordances of AI for creating experiences that are really tailored to the kinds of learning needs that students see in a classroom, say a middle school science classroom. In contrast, for example, to the kinds of learning that they might get to do in a science museum, which is much more free choice. The kinds of differences that we see are the times of engagement that students have with the learning technologies varies widely. We might see, for example, in a science museum, engagement times of, say, a couple of minutes might be considered an eternity, whereas in a classroom, we actually might get days or weeks or even months. And so there are really interesting differences that we can use AI to kind of attune itself to create the most effective learning experiences that are really context dependent.
Yeah, totally. And I just want to add something else, which is to do with not only context, but also the embodiment associated with the learning experience. And we've been exploring social robots to support and to help the learning by giving some physicality to that experience of learning. In particular, we've been looking also at creativity. How can this embodied interaction with the context, the world? So imagine a museum and you have a robot that will guide you, that will help you. So this embodiment can have an effect on learning. And I think it's something that needs to be done because different people learn differently, and the embodiment and the social robots that you can place to foster the learning has affords a different kind of experience.
Well, I love all these windows that you are opening. So Jeremy is saying we should explore beyond formal learning, which informal learning is also an opportunity, but also we are exploring that we can have interactions at the individual and also at the collective level. So the number of opportunities we have here is really amazing. And I was wondering whether, based on your studies, you've been focusing on some ages in particular or it's more open. And this, in the same way, I'm also thinking, now that Anna mentioned the physicality, to what extent this could open opportunities for learners with disabilities? Is something that you guys think that this is an area of opportunity for further research?
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, we've been exploring exactly that, the use of embodied learning to support learners with difficulty in vision, difficulty in interacting in certain ways, and use the embodied interaction exactly for that. So the tangibility of the robots that are able to express emotions or are able to have lights and are able to guide a learner into a certain direction can be used for that, to foster play and to foster learning. Yeah, absolutely.
And the sorts of technologies and the sorts of experiences that we want to create for students, of course, varies widely with their age. In our own group, we tend to work with upper elementary school students. So in the U.S., these are grades, say, 4 and 5. And we do a substantial amount of work at the middle school, grades 6, 7, and 8. Now, there's an enormous developmental difference between even a 6th grader and an 8th grader. And what that means is that the technologies need to manifest differently. So, for example, if we're working with embodied conversational agents, the look and feel of those conversational agents and even the roles that they play, say a virtual mentor or a virtual facilitator, need to be different. And it's really interesting to think about how AI can be used to communicate differently with these students as well. There are all kinds of really interesting questions around language use, again, not just with single students, but with groups of students, and how coordination might be supported by that kind of collaboration.
And just to build on what James is saying there, one of the things we know from learning sciences is that students, when they're working on a difficult science concept or a difficult math concept, they often start with familiar language and familiar ways of talking. They move towards the more formal, like equations, for example. But our traditional technologies for learning have just started in the formal forms of communication, stayed there. You've had to type a mathematical equation in this really awkward way. And so one of the things I think also become possible is for the ways we interact with technology to more closely reflect the ways we learn, which includes just like using everyday language to express the beginning of an idea and only later moving to like the really rigorous forms, like an equation.
Such an interesting insight that you shared. So you've been referring to the idea of the embodiment. Could you, for people like me that lacks a lot of knowledge in this field, how does it look in terms of what is the experience that a student, for instance, will see with these new interfaces? I'm struggling to understand whether there is a physical, is within the screen, is it 2, is it 3D? If you can provide a bit of examples for people to understand what do you have in mind. And since we are not seeing images, we can use our imagination based on what you can lead us to.
So when we talk about these embodied agents that support learning, we can have them in 2D on the screen, 3D on the screen, but we can have an embodied agent that is embodied in the physical robot that is there in your environment, on your desk. For example, we had a scenario where we had a cat that plays chess with you, and you're learning how to play chess by interacting with this robot that plays chess. So it's there, it becomes an entity that is embodied that interacts with you. And I think this difference between a 2D character or a 2D interface or 3D character and an embodied one that is in your physical environment raises very interesting results, and the experience is very different. For example, people pay more attention to a physical robot than a virtual one. But of course, we also have the fact that if you have a story being told in an environment, in a 2D or 3D environment on the screen, you can have very rich scenarios. The story can be told in a way that you explore different worlds and so on. So it depends on what you want, but these characters can become part of your interaction, can become your tutor, can become your friend, can become your peer. They can become some characters that help your learning process.
I think one of the things that's really exciting in what you said, Anna, too, is students really crave that the learning experiences they have are connected to the real world. And it'd be great if in a learning experience, they could have the experience of going out to a place where, I mean, maybe robots are being built and they can see how science concepts are used in designing those robots even. But the people who build robots don't have time to spend with every student. So what if it's a simulated adventure where you have the experience of talking to people in a more realistic setting, but they don't necessarily have to actually go there to have that. I think that could be really exciting to students to connect the real world and the world of the classroom or the world even at home where they're learning.
Absolutely, yes.
And also connect worlds from different students in different parts of the world that really open a huge level of opportunities for people to share their experiences in a much more simulated environment.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, I think going back to the question of different cultures, that is something that these environments, if they are shared by different cultures, can be a way to engage with different cultures, to put yourself into the positions of others and deal with conflicts and so on. So I do think that that's also a way to address cultural differences and really overcome some cultural clashes that may exist. I remember at some point we had a project using virtual reality and virtual agents to train intercultural experiences to make students feel that they're part of different cultures, they're in different world, in a different world, to learn about different ways of being and interacting.
So what I'd like to suggest is that we're at a turning point in our conversation here. What both of you are sharing and what we're getting excited about is a very humanistic view of learning with more empathy, attention to problems like bullying, you know, forms of learning that people have used since the ancient times where we sat around campfires together, like telling stories. So that's really exciting, this humanistic view of learning with technology. But there must be really hard challenges. This can't be easy to pull off. And so what I'd like you each to do is maybe talk a little bit about what are some of the challenges that require research and require people to come together if we're going to achieve this vision.
One of the really interesting, and I will say fun, aspects of doing work in AI and education is that there are so many disciplines that need to be brought to bear and so many kinds of collaborators that need to be involved to be able to address these challenges. So there are all kinds of really interesting technology challenges underlying all of these kinds of systems that we're building. They call for advances in natural language processing, similarly for machine learning, similar for computer vision. And we need to be able to harness these together to create AI learning technologies that are more effective. And at least in our group, that means trying to think about ways to have more generative narrative creation. So sort of runtime narrative creation where decisions about the problem-solving plot, the embodied characters in the story, all of the conversations that go on to support the story-centered learning are really being driven by these advances that are required in machine learning and computer vision and so forth. But then when we get to what I think is really the most interesting aspect of this, it's how do we craft the learning experiences themselves to be most effective for all these different cultures, different contexts, different subject matters, different learner populations, and the whole sort of holistic look at how AI education is to work is something that really demands research. It's not something I think that industry is likely to bite off. So it's calling for some, I think, not only fundamental advances in understanding how people learn with these advanced technologies, but also trying to understand how we can take the technologies themselves and redesign them around our new understandings of how learning can work in this new future that we're just emerging into.
Anna, what sort of challenges do you see?
In the same way as James, I think that AI still has many technical difficulties for us to be able to create systems that, for example, understand a learner, is able to adapt to a learner, to that particular learner, and is able to recognize what it says. So we still, although we are dealing with a lot of technology and we've seen huge advances in AI in the past 10 years, I would say, it's been amazing what the AI community has achieved. It's still not there yet to be able to, for example, understand when a child says, oh, I did not understand this very well. I would like an explanation of this or that. The system still do not have the capability to really engage in deep conversations and have the knowledge to be able to really interact in a complete natural manner like we do. And I think that's a challenge. And I think there's other challenges that we face when we do AI for education, which is to think that learning is such a complex activity, but it involves many stakeholders, the teachers, the kids, the parents. And sometimes we don't see the whole scenario. We don't see see the whole thing because we want to create this technology, for example, to address cyberbullying. But it's the whole ecosystem of characters, is the parents, is the teachers. The teachers probably don't want to have a system in the classroom. It's the directors of the school, or is the parents at home. So when we think about AI for education, we need to consider all these dimensions and all these actors to come into place and to adopt technology or not. And therefore, it becomes a challenge in itself, because we may have a very nice technology, a robot that does this very well, but because it's so expensive, schools are not going to pay for it. So there's those challenges of really integrating our technology into schools nowadays and into education and mainstream education in particular.
So people and the technologies are going to be working together, and the AI embodied agents might make decisions like to change the direction of a story. But I've heard this concept of explainability is really tough for AI. And that's what I want to ask you to talk about, James. What is explainability and why is it important if we're going to build AI systems for use in education?
Yeah, this is a great question. One of the kind of core problems that the field of AI in education has been grappling with for quite literally 50 years now, so our field has been around for a little while, is typically called the learner modeling problem. So learner models are computational models that systems use to model learners' plans, their goals, their belief, their competencies, and it's really core to driving adaptivity. Now, these learner models sometimes can take on different forms, and they're used by different stakeholders. We would like, for example, for teachers to be able to inspect learner models, so to speak. And by that, I mean they should be able to facilitate classroom learning in a way that's informed by what the system believes the student understands and what concepts they may have misconceptions about and what kinds of problem-solving impasses they're facing. Now, this is an interesting problem for explainability because we really need for those models to be understandable to teachers in this particular case. But we also need those models to be understandable by researchers so that we can improve our designs of learning technologies and learning experiences. And there's something kind of an interesting confluence of technologies in the last few years, which is that learner models are actually machine learned models typically. And in recent years, these are machine learning techniques that are based on what's called deep learning. Now, deep learning is computationally the most powerful. It's empirically the most successful. It often will exhibit the greatest accuracies, the greatest precision. It will learn very efficiently. It can operate very quickly at runtime. So all these great characteristics. But the one characteristic it does not have is explainability. So because deep learning has this kind of impediment to understanding what's going on inside the model, it poses really significant challenges to stakeholders who we would like to be able to understand the learner models that all of these learning technologies are based on. It's a really interesting technical problem.
I think explainability here, it's important to really bring about or give the information of what the technology is doing. So what the deep learning model is doing. But there's a big reason for that is also the fact that people want to understand what is happening because they want to trust that the system and the technology is doing what they hope the technology is doing. And it's not deceiving them and it's telling them the right thing. And to justify, to have this trust and guarantee some kind of trustworthiness in the technology, explainability is an important aspect there.
I love how this conversation is going. I was just thinking about trust as I was listening to James and you talk, and then you brought it up right away. I just want to ask to go a little deeper on trust for a minute, because on the one hand, maybe people trust AI too much. Like there's the famous program Eliza from way back, and people thought they were talking to a real therapist when it was a really dumb computer program. And so maybe they trusted it too much. And then we're also scared of AI and we're worried about it, that it's dangerous. And so what do you think, James and Anna? Do we trust AI too much, or are we too scared of it? Or how should we think about this issue of trust?
I totally think that it's both. Sometimes people trust too much, and sometimes we don't trust enough. And there's this distrust of technology.
Trustworthy AI is arguably one of the most important aspects of AI research going on now, and certainly for the foreseeable future. And I can't think of an area that it is more important to solve this problem for than education. So having trustworthy education systems is central to being able to confidently and comfortably being able to have them populate our classrooms. And there are not only technology challenges here, there are also policy challenges around, for example, not only how the system operates, but who owns the data that's behind the scenes. So there are all kinds of really interesting questions that are related to not just trust, but also privacy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, for example, I'm in Europe, and there's a big drive from the governments and from the EU to push towards this trustworthy ecosystem and to the AI Act. I don't know if you've heard of it, which is this new legislation that is coming from Europe in order to guarantee some kind of trustworthiness in the products coming in the AI technology. But I want to distinguish something here, because you may guarantee that the data sets and the information that you use to create these learner models is fair and is trustworthy, but still people interacting with the system may not trust it, because there's many factors that affect trust. Or the other way around, you have a bad system and people may trust. So trustworthy and trust, there's a relationship, but this trust relationship is a two predicate thing, whereas trustworthy is the property that we have in the systems that we produce that really give this guarantee that it's been done in a way that we can trust it. And in education, it's fundamental that trust is guaranteed in two ways. It's trustworthy and people trust. The teachers trust, the parents and the learners trust the system.
Let me pick up on that. I have my final two questions. This conversation has been fascinating. The first one is on teachers and the second on systems. On the teacher side, I'm really pleased the deep understanding that you have of learning, that it's not only about transferring information, it's not only about ideas, but also emotions. But let's try to think this at the scale, which is one of the challenges that we have at the World Bank, supporting countries to design solutions for the systemic level. So I guess one of the questions that will come regarding trust from the teacher community is whether these solutions are either to enhance their role or to replace them. And I would love to hear your voice. I mean, let's remember that during the pandemic, in some cases, many students didn't have access to teachers. So in some cases, adding this extra layer would be fantastic. And in some cases, teachers cannot cope with all the students at the same time. So enhancing the role would be interesting. But I would love to hear your reactions on this.
So I think one of the most interesting opportunities that AI provides is the ability to incredibly accommodate so many different kinds of situations. So let's take the example that you've raised where literally no teachers are available. So I guess I have no hesitation in predicting that the medium-term future, that we're going to be able to have technologies now that can help students that are in that situation. But I will also say, and perhaps even more emphatically, that that is far from ideal. So we know that there are so many capabilities that humans have as teachers that machines simply cannot have. And so I think one of the most interesting opportunities is a kind of teacher support role. So AI as facilitator, or imagine a teacher having a classroom of, say, 30 students in a middle school classroom, doesn't typically have teaching assistants. It would be a rare case where a middle school teacher would have a teaching assistant, and certainly almost never two. But imagine that a middle school teacher could have a room full of teaching assistants, virtual teaching assistants, who could support him or her in doing all kinds of really interesting learning in the classroom. And by that, I mean not just typical stage on the stage kind of learning, but say rich collaborative learning like we've been talking about, being able to orchestrate discussions and problem solving episodes among groups of students and being able to promote creativity in doing so. And because the bandwidth that a teacher has available to himself or herself in a classroom is limited, the kind of amplification potential of AI for these kinds of situations is just enormous. And I'm personally myself especially excited about this sort of teacher support role.
I love that, James. And one thing I love to think about is we usually use the letters AI for artificial intelligence, but there's also IA, which puts the letters in the opposite direction. And that stands for intelligence augmentation. And I have to say, I really like the augmentation perspective because it focuses us on how we can support people to do learning and do teaching better. I just think there's a lot of hope for us if we pursue that IA direction. So we'd love to have more discussions about that. But let me turn it back to Cristobal, who has one last question.
Thank you. So the final question is, what is your call to action? Imagine that you were recording a podcast in which hundreds of countries will be able to listen to you like today. And I guess the question I will ask is, how could education system be prepared to effectively integrate these new trends that you are sharing? What countries should be doing to get ready, or teachers? What is your advice on these coming fields?
So I can chime in here. I think one of the most likely scenarios in the coming years is one of ubiquity. So as we're seeing enormous decreases in the kinds of compute platforms that are required and the power increasing at such a phenomenal rate, we're also seeing the same kinds of algorithmic advances in AI. And so while it's, to me, much more difficult to think about the kind of societal piece of this, that is, what's the preparation that teachers, that administrators, that districts, that planners at both the sort of national and international level need to do, I can predict with pretty high confidence that these technologies are going to be available. And so I think if I were giving advice, I would be giving advice not about things like, for example, purchasing hardware or things like that. But I think it will turn out to be the case that with even sort of commodity level hardware and modest connectivity, the likelihood of having incredibly powerful AI-driven learning experiences, say, in the next 5 years to 10 years around the globe is incredibly high.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think the connectivity and the fact that now our technology, our tools can reach anywhere, everyone. And I think that is something that will change the way we learn. And I remember when the pandemic started that people were saying, well, for many years, we were trying to move online with teaching. For many years, we've been trying to get people to really engage in this collaborative learning online. And then in a matter of a week or 2 weeks, everyone was there engaging in a way that they could see presentations in the other side of the world. They could engage with peers. So there's the technology is there, and we need to take the opportunity to really foster this more global learning. I would say that what we are experiencing now is the unraveling of a global learning. It's not a global pandemic, it's also a global learning. Our students now can learn, for example, in Portugal, we can learn from amazing classes in the US, but it's the same in many places. So it really is a power that we are unleashing. And I think it's really good.
Boy, I'm excited with what you shared there, Anna, of the sense of optimism and the sense of engagement, particularly. And I'd just like to close about three words I like for what governments and what people can do right now. They all start with the letter I. The first word is informed. People need to become more informed about AI because it's really complex and we need to start learning about it. Governments can help with that. A second thing is teachers and educators and parents need to become involved. That's my second I word. we can't leave the design of these technologies just to technologists or just to scientists. We need teachers to be involved. And my third word is influence. And that's because technology comes with a lot of power. And the power over that technology has to be something that educators, parents, students have influence in. And that it's not just coming from the view of technology itself, but it's where do we want to go as a society that tells stories to learn? How do we control those stories? How do we make it our story? So that's how I'd like to end my part of the show, is just to say we need to inform people, we need to involve them in design, and we need to make sure the influence of everyday people is respected as these technologies enter education.
Well, thank you so much, Jeremy, and also James and Anna. This has been remarkably inspiring. And I think the idea of inform, involve, and influence, but also this concept of unleashing the power of the global learning that we can learn out of this, I think is outstanding. But at the same time, from the development point of view, this is raises a huge alarm in terms of connectivity that we have to keep working on enabling the conditions to allow that these new technologies will open new opportunities and won't segregate those who lack of the infrastructure. We will keep this conversation going in the next series of podcasts from this series, but I wanted to express all our gratitude to Anna, James, and Jeremy for your active participation today. And we look forward to keep this conversation in the future.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. It was great.